appreciate it. Last speaker, speaking of the agroecosystem as a system and looking at things in terms of interactions that you would not necessarily expect. We've been interested in studying how below ground processes impact the susceptibility of crops to insects and disease for quite some time now. Let's see, which button should I hit? Should I hit this one here? Okay. Primarily through observations made by farmers and also by researchers now, showing that in paired organic and conventional farms, side by side, we consistently see lower levels of insect damage in these organic farms. We wanted to know why this was, and so what we did was to do a series of studies that I'm not going to report on today. It's published, done some time ago. Where we brought these soils from these farms into the greenhouse, fertilized them with either inorganic fertilizers or organic fertilizers and in a factorial design, and released European corn borer in these growth rooms to see where they would lay their eggs. And what we found, and this is a summary of like five experiments that we conducted, this is an overall result, we did see higher levels of egg laying on these plants that were in the organic, or excuse me, in the conventional soils. But more importantly, or I think just as interesting biologically, was when we looked at the variance in egg laying, it was much greater on those plants that were receiving ammonium nitrate as opposed to compost. So this idea of greater variability gave rise to what I have coined the biological buffering concept. And the biological buffering concept emphasizes the idea that because in natural systems, plants normally get their nutrients through the action of the food detrital or the detrital food web in the soil, and not through, of course, a chemical fertilizer. And this provides a stability and resilience to natural ecosystems that has been lost with our introduction of inorganic fertilizers. In terms of possible mechanisms, we would further hypothesize two possibilities. One is what we call mineral balance. And this derives from the idea that because the nutrients are coming from that detrital food web, the release rates are different and they're more level, and therefore those dynamics match the needs of the plant better, and so the plant is in better mineral balance. And we already have good evidence for this already. But another possibility is the idea of induced resistance, and this derives from the fact that that plant has its roots in this soup of microbial activity. And if it's a very healthy ecosystem and you have a lot of microbial activity down there, there's the possibility that those microbes are actually eliciting the defensive response of the plants. And there again has been demonstrated, this has been demonstrated even for beneficial microbes associated with the roots. Of course, when we talk about plant signaling, there are two main pathways that we're familiar with, and this is the salicylic acid pathway and the jasmonic acid pathway. The first one is primarily associated with pathogens and sap-feeding insects, whereas the latter one is more associated with wounding and chewing insects. But now we know, of course, that these are not discrete pathways. We understand that there's a lot of crosstalk between these pathways, and we really need to look at these more as networks, integrative networks, rather than pathways. Okay, so in terms of trying to understand what the mechanisms are for this observation that we've been making, we decided to take a functional genomics approach, and that, of course, breaks down into three methodologies: transcriptomics, where we're looking at gene expression, differential gene expression; proteomics, where we're looking at differences in what proteins are produced; and then finally, metabolomics, where you're doing a high-throughput analysis of a fairly large number of metabolites in the plant. Now, for these experiments, we switched to tomatoes, but the experimental design was basically the same, where we planted tomatoes in organic soil that we collected from either organic or conventional farms, and then amended them either with ammonium nitrate or a dairy manure compost. After some period of time then, half of these plants then we infested with white flies, and then 7 days later, these were female white flies, 7 days later we looked for egg laying on these plants and kind of the number of eggs that were laid. Then sometime later, we made collections of leaves that were used for extraction of RNA, and also for our metabolomic analysis. First, in terms of tomato growth, the results that we got from this system really did not parallel exactly what we had seen in the corn, in that we really didn't see a strong soil history effect, which is what we had seen in the corn. Here, the effect seemed to be more the short-term effect of the type of fertilizer that was being used. And you can see on the left-hand side there, this has to do with transplant, seedling transplant survivorship, and you can see that those plants that were had been fertilized with dairy manure compost had higher survivorship in the transplant, and also at the end of the experiment, they ended up growing larger, irrespective of the soil. Now, with regard to the white flies, here the results were not as clear-cut, and in hindsight, we realized that this was probably not the most discriminating assay we could have done. First of all, it was a non-choice test. They were forced to remain on these leaves. They were remaining there for 7 days, so which is a good portion of the adult life. So there really were, it was either lay eggs here or don't lay eggs at all. But nevertheless, at least in the organic soil plants, we did see higher levels of egg laying in those plants that received the ammonium nitrate. And on the left, the right-hand side there, I combine these two effects. And if you look at it with regard to the number of eggs that were laid relative to some unit of plant growth, there is a fairly strong differential. Now, also then, we finally took these same plants and inoculated them with a disease agent, Pseudomonas syringae. And you can see once again that same plant that received the highest number of eggs, that was relatively poor growing, also was more susceptible to disease agents. Okay, so we took our RNA that we extracted from these plants, submitted to a Nimblegen tomato microarray analysis. This microarray was developed in conjunction with other scientists at Ohio State. This microarray looks at over 40,000 targets. So it gives us a pretty good idea of what's going on in the plant, at least from a genetic point of view. These two scatter diagrams show you the kind of the reliability of the assay as opposed to the treatment effect. And so on the left-hand side, you can see what we're doing there is comparing the response or the expression of one compost sample or composted plant to another composted plant. The blue area there, that represents a range of less than twofold differential expression. Any of the orange dots represent differential expression of greater than twofold. So when you see when we look at the when we compare the treatments, you see much more scatter there. So clearly, we're seeing differential gene expression in these plants, which is interesting to begin with. Secondly, when we take that a little further and we use a cluster analysis, we can see that these differences actually are consistent between the treatments, such that we were able to very nicely separate out our samples relative to the type of fertility that they received, so that the differences are there and that they are consistent. All right, bringing down one more level, one of the real challenges of doing microarray analysis is knowing what to do with all this data. And the other challenge is, although I said we have 41,000 targets, many of these we really don't know what they are. Okay, so if we then go through this long list of 41,000 targets and separate out those of the ones that we are interested in, so what I did was to look at those that had that were associated with the salicylic acid pathway or pathogen-related protein, you can see that of the ones that showed differential expression, I think it's 8 of the 9 were upregulated in the composted plants. All right, so that's consistent with the idea that those soil microbes may be eliciting this defensive pathway. Is that 10 minutes already? Okay, I'm going to have to hurry. All right, and on the other hand, if you look at the jasmonic acid-related pathways, there we see greater expression in the ammonium nitrate plants. And this may be a result of, the crosstalk between the two. When we look at nitrogen metabolism targets, here again we see these very clear-cut differences. So that those that are related to nitrogen transport tend to be upregulated in the composted plants, where those that are producing proteinases are showing higher expression in the ammonium nitrate plants. All right, again, I have to go through this very quickly, but in terms of the metabolomics, one of the things that we looked at is the profile of amino acid patterns, and this was very interesting. First of all, we saw if we just look at overall levels of amino acids, we see almost a twofold higher level of free amino acids in the plants are receiving ammonium nitrate. And this is primarily due to proline, asparagine, and to a less extent by GABA, a glutamic acid and aspartic acid. Finally, if we do a principal component analysis, you can see that these plants, based on their amino acid profiles, form these clusters that can be, for the most part, separated. Over on the right-hand side, you see the ammonium nitrate treatments, which are very variable and also overlap quite a bit. Whereas if you look at the composted plants, here we actually see very tight regulation of the levels in the profiles. So it's a very interesting pattern. All right, so I'm going to have to skip ahead. We also did sugars. Let me just conclude by saying that the results suggest that the soil microbial activity in communities can modulate above-ground insect-plant interactions as well as interactions with pathogens. And then secondly, we believe these mechanisms have to do either with impacts on plant nitrogen and nitrogen metabolism and or induction of plant defensive pathways. So, thank you. I don't really have an explanation. It really shows the complexity of these systems. You really need to, right now we're just basically treating these soils like black boxes, and we're not doing a very good job of really understanding and monitoring all the things that are going on in there. Although we saw in our corn experiments, we saw pretty consistent results. Here we're seeing that the soil history is pretty important, and that soils is pretty important. And so we need to come up with monitoring tools to do that.